Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Andres Oswell with Portland for All, an organization with programs addressing the root causes of the toughest issues facing Portland. We'll talk about those programs and also about Mike Schmidt, who lost his bid for a second term as district attorney for Multnomah County. We'll talk about the changes Portland can expect under the new DA-elect Nathan Vasquez, who takes office in 2025. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Andres, let's start by talking about Portland for All. Talk about the organization and your programs.
So Portland for All started through a series of informal conversations. It started by folks talking to friends and family, to their neighbors, to their coworkers about the challenges facing the city. I think a lot of people can relate to that, but also about the lack of hope and optimism and vision for our city's future. So through those conversations, people came together, and what is now Portland for All was born. It was really envisioned to be an organizing home for people who felt like there wasn't that organization, that vision, that thing that they could be a part of to work towards a better future. We're completely volunteer run. We're organized as a 501c4, which allows us to do political activity because we recognize that elected officials have a lot of power in our system and the ability to change the direction of our city. But we also, and this will be really relevant with Mike, recognize that elected officials alone aren't going to get us out of the problem. For us to solve the challenges that we're facing, we know it will take all of us coming together, not just once, not just this year for the elections, but on an ongoing basis to keep bringing folks together, talking about the issues, and seeing what we can do about it at a person level, because it's going to take all of us. Portland for All has four major programs. We do community conversations, which are town halls across town, to give us an opportunity to hear directly from folks about the issues they're seeing and the solutions that they think we need. We have monthly meetups as an opportunity for folks to get involved. Like I said, everyone's a volunteer, so we're always looking for new folks who want to join in and help do the work. We do policy talks, which is an event that Mike was a part of, where each month we'll have a conversation on a different topic, invite a panel of experts, and have them frame what the issue is and what solutions will help us get to those root causes. And then the last thing we do is endorsements. We were active in the county races, endorsing Mike Schmidt, Shannon Singleton, and Megan Moyer. We're going to be active in the city races. We just launched our city council endorsements, and we really want to keep raising these issues that we hear from our community are important, but also to lift up leaders who are pushing human-centered, compassionate solutions, not regressive, pushback.
And Andres, give your website and also, are there any upcoming events?
Yeah, so our website is portlandforall.org. You can read a little bit about us, see the policy talks, and our endorsement process on there. We're working on planning an event in North and Northeast Portland to talk about the role of the city and county. We're working on upcoming community conversations. We're going to have another policy talk in July. We just had one this week talking about housing and housing production. So those will continue on Zoom to give folks different ways of engaging.
So, Mike Schmidt, as I said, lost his bid for a second term as district attorney for Multnomah County. And in May of 2020, he won with 77% of the vote. So, let's talk about what the challenges were in Portland when Mike did win his first term as district attorney.
Yeah, I think it's important to take us a ways back. We were in a very different world when Mike Schmidt was elected. We were in the midst of a global pandemic. Things were shut down and in the process of reopening. We also were in, for at least my generation, an unprecedented time of racial reckoning. People were thinking and talking about race and racial justice and injustice and the criminal justice system on a level and to a degree that we had never seen, at least in recent decades. And so there was a real heightened focus and awareness on how our systems have been unjust, how they have overburdened communities of color, how they haven't been based on facts or real solutions, but instead on kind of these reactionary and often emotional policies. And so I think Mike came to office in that upswell of we have to do things different. There has to be a different way. And so I think the focus in that moment really was on reforming our systems, correcting for the injustices of the past, and coming up with new ways of keeping our communities safe while avoiding those same issues. That's very different than where we are right now, which I'm sure is something we'll talk more about.
Let's talk about in these 4 years since he was elected in May of 2020, what were some of his accomplishments?
I mean, I think the things that we saw at the very beginning was just a very notable shift. The previous DA resigned early to let Mike take office in recognition of the overwhelming voice of support from voters that this is the direction they wanted to go in. And there was a marked shift, especially in that era of protests, to have a district attorney who recognized the systemic injustices, who recognized the racial dynamics that had been there a long time, and just having someone in such a prominent position and a position in the law enforcement system, speaking out and acknowledging those truths, I think was really powerful and did a lot for folks. On a more specific and like tangible level, some of the ways that Mike turned that into policy in his position was revisiting past cases that had been improperly prosecuted or unjustly convicted, and making sure that some of those biases and factual errors were corrected because that affects people's lives. There was a look at how our criminal justice system affects survivors and folks who are undocumented, and being thoughtful and intentional in those lived experiences and creating a way for folks to move through the criminal justice system in a way that doesn't worsen their lives. I think there was a real attention to how to look at issues that were happening, like catalytic converter theft and car break-ins, and address them in a systemic rather than punitive way. So I think there was a lot of tangible policies that Mike pushed to really look at the roots of problems, as well as taking stock and reckoning with the history of the district attorney in Multnomah County of prosecution in the area and trying to correct some of those wrongs from the past.
And one of those programs was the STEP Court that he partnered with the Multnomah County Circuit Court to develop. In 2023, 30% of people incarcerated in our prison system for assault one or robbery one under our mandatory minimum sentencing law, Measure 11, were Black or Hispanic or Latino. And that is one of the ways he helped divert people from those long-term mandatory minimum sentences. Laws that really are destroying lives and especially lives of our youth and our communities.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think things like STEP Court and diversion programs were really critical for folks who have committed a crime, who are in the criminal justice system, understanding and thinking about what we want the outcomes to be. When we think about crime, we want to make sure that more crime doesn't occur, right? Like we want safe communities that are not experiencing crime. We also want to think about the individual and what their trajectory is. What is the likelihood of recidivism, of them reoffending? What is the likelihood of their outcomes after being released? And so I think things like STEP Court took an evidence-based approach of looking at best practices, looking at research. There really is a lot of resources out there, and trying to create a program that provided a support system and a framework that would reduce the likelihood of reoffending, meaning there would be fewer victims of crime in the future. And so setting up a five-phase process where folks had requirements to meet at each step to determine what level of treatment or supervision or court appearances they needed to make, and having them go through that like really structured process to reach a outcome where we're seeing less recidivism and seeing that big shift from, I think before STEP Court, like the baseline was a 50% recidivism rate. So folks who committed a crime were half of them were likely to commit another low risk crime again to less than 10%. And so seeing that really stark drop, I think was notable and showed the effectiveness of a strategy like STEP Court.
And as you said, Andres, Portland for All was born out of conversations about the challenges and the negativity facing Portland. And this is also Mike's approach to reach out to the community, engage the community. Can you talk more about some of those programs that he implemented in the county?
Mike took community partnership very seriously and was intentional about reaching out to communities that have historically been over-policed, communities that have historically been targeted by the criminal justice system, and seeking restitution and creating different and positive relationships, recognizing that painful past and showing through action, not just talking about doing things differently. So I think there was a number of community partnerships that were really notable. He worked with folks in the Black community around reducing crime rates, but also about reducing policing and supporting folks after they were released from incarceration to have successful reentry. And I think that was really critical to a lot of the work he was doing. I think that there is a parallel between Mike's term in office and his recent election loss and the creation of Portland for All, because almost from day one, Mike was a target. He had billboards put up around town with his face on it. He was the scapegoat of a lot of public conversation and campaigns. The media was quick to highlight every misstep he made. And I think that that really negative, reactive environment is the same environment that Portland for All was created in response to, of saying the public dialogue is being really dominated by a fear-mongering, divisive narrative. And that isn't who we are. That isn't who we are as Portlanders. That does not reflect us and our communities. And so Portland for All was born to counter that narrative and offer a approach that is more aligned with our values, that is more aligned with who Portland is and always has been, and give folks kind of an alternative to what they're hearing and what's being pushed more dominantly.
Mike also cared deeply about our youth, Andres, and he was a teacher in Louisiana schools, and he saw the youth being pulled into the criminal legal system, either as being incarcerated, or children with parents who were incarcerated, or victims themselves. And he understood the collateral consequences of a criminal record for our youth. And he worked on expungements and did a lot for reentry of people, trying to help them to restart their life and making sure they were on the right path. Can you talk more about those programs that he was very involved with?
And like you said, Mike was a high school teacher, and he talks a lot about his story of how his journey to becoming a district attorney was in part pushed by his experiences as a high school teacher and having students who were impacted by the criminal justice system, who were being caught in the school to prison pipeline, Black students who were being over-disciplined and conditioned to be seen as a problem. And I think that journey is what brought him into this role of recognizing that he had the potential to be a part of a different approach for a criminal justice system that recognized the ways that youth are harmed and proposed alternatives. I think that some of the things that you're talking about are really critical because they hadn't been seen before, right? We hadn't seen a focus from a district attorney on expungement. And now that Mike is on his way out of office, we're seeing very stark differences in the approach he took and other district attorneys in the area took, and what Nathan Vasquez is signaling his priorities and his focus will be. So I think that we are soon going to see what a difference it made to have Mike or someone like Mike as our district attorney, as we return to a district attorney much more in the tradition of previous district attorneys in Portland and in the area.
And I'd like to play a clip from one of your policy talks. It was the first policy talk that you had in 2024. Andres, do you want to set this up for our listeners?
Of course, yeah. So as Portland for All was developing our programming, we realized that we as a community of volunteers weren't experts on all the issues. And we thought there was an opportunity to bring folks who were, who had deep expertise, who were doing the work on a day-to-day basis and hearing from them. And we really wanted to expand this opportunity to everyone, to have an opportunity for the public to hear directly from these policy experts and hear what the issues are and what policies and programs are actually going to get at the root causes of the problems we're seeing, as opposed to surface level fixes. So the first one, really topical, we started in January of this year with creating safe communities for everyone, recognizing how much community safety was a concern. So we had three panelists for that. Candace Avalos, who's now running for city council in District 1, Lamar Wise, who has a long history of civic advocacy in the criminal justice space, and Mike Schmidt, the district attorney. And so each of them talked about what the issues were and what solutions were needed. And Mike talked about some of the work that he has done.
From my experience, we have different challenges that come up, and challenges can pop up and become acute, and then they can kind of fade. But I think what is consistent, no matter what the challenge that we face is, in my experience as DA, is connecting with different people from different walks and trying to tackle these problems holistically. So I've talked about gun violence, partnering with epidemiologists and teachers and other folks from other backgrounds and perspectives. And so I think there are a number of things that have impacted our community that we can apply a similar framework and a similar lens to. I'll talk a little bit about bias crimes. You know, we are seeing an uptick in bias crimes. And part of that, you know, we know is stirred up by events that are outside of our local region. National politics can stir up bias crimes. International events and conflicts can stir up bias crimes. Even, you know, pandemics and illness can stir up bias crimes. But so whatever the thing is that is, you know, driving some of these things in our community, I think that, you know, how we respond to those things is what's crucial. So, you know, for me in my office, you know, we've added resources to combat bias crimes. We have a bias crime prosecutor. We have a bias crimes investigator. Not only, of course, do they work on specific cases, but they are out there meeting with community members who might be the people who are impacted by these crimes. Bias crimes are one of those things, like a lot of crime, it doesn't just impact the individual who might be targeted. When people are targeted for who they are or what they look like or what their perceived background or anything else is, that makes our entire community less safe for a lot of different people. So making connections to community groups where we can kind of hear from them what's going on and how we can be of assistance. So bias crimes is an area where I think we can do a lot of work. Domestic violence is another type of crime that it impacts individuals, but it has ripple effects into entire communities and destabilizing families and children. And, you know, intimate partner violence can be some of the most deadly violence in our community. I've gotten to tour some places around the country that do a fantastic job, like holistically working with victims of domestic violence. And what they saw is that when you build the services and you have things to offer people and families and the impacted parties, reporting goes up. More people report those things because you're actually offering them not just arrest and prosecution, but you're offering them services that they need. Can be shelter, can be food security, can be talking to a health provider. There's a lot of different things that survivors need of domestic violence. I think that's an area that we can put a lot of resources. Wage theft is something that I've really been trying to get going in terms of criminal prosecution. We talk a lot about theft in our community and retail theft and everything else, and that's important. You know, theft is not okay. It doesn't matter who's doing the stealing, but we don't put a lot of emphasis locally or nationally on the number of the theft that is estimated to be the most theft that we face as a community, which is when people have their wages stolen. And that is frequently targeting communities that are disempowered or that lack power. So immigrant communities and people who maybe would not feel comfortable reporting their wages being withheld to enforcement tend to be disproportionately targeted for that type of a crime. So I think, you know, when you look at the different types of crimes that are impacting our community and think about how do we create safety, I like to target the crimes that have ripple effects across our entire community. And targeting the things that really destabilize our communities and make us all feel less safe, and knowing that sticking up for one victim is really sticking up for our entire community.
So let's turn to our DA-elect, Nathan Vasquez. He will come into office January 2025, and he will face the same issues and challenges that Mike is and has faced during his term as DA. Our new DA will face protests, he will face criticisms, and he is vowing to prosecute. What are some of the differences, and what are some of the things that Portland will face with our new district attorney in January?
I mean, I think what we will see in January will look very different than what we saw in 2020 in a number of ways. Folks have very strong opinions about the process of 2020 and what went wrong and how it could have been done better. I am concerned about what January will look like. We have a new district attorney coming in who has been very explicit about his intent to crack down, to take a tough on crime approach, to be aggressive, impunitive, and be seen as having a strong hand. And to translate that for folks, I think that means that folks will be thrown in jail more. We will see more police violence towards protesters. At the same time, the city of Portland just voted to authorize the police bureau to spend an additional $1 million to stock up on munitions and crowd control devices. And so I think our area, again, is in a very different climate than it was 4 years ago. And I would expect a much more violent response to protests, a lot more aggressive crackdowns. And I think it's going to be really concerning to see our streets, to see our community members be treated aggressively and violently by law enforcement, and then aggressively prosecuted by the new district attorney.
DA-elect Nathan Vasquez is vowing also to crush the cartels.
I think during the election, we were really concerned by the rhetoric that Nathan Vasquez used and by the parallels, honestly, to Donald Trump and really over-the-top bombastic claims that are just unbackable. It is inconceivable to think about how one district attorney in Portland, Oregon, can crush international drug cartels. I think it's important to recognize that there are real problems. Like, no one wants to live in a world where we have drug cartels, where we have these organizations that are violent and amoral, operating and being financed substantially. That said, how we respond to that is wildly different, right? I think that the actions that Nathan Vasquez takes aren't going to crush the cartels. They're going to crush communities of color and low-income communities, because those are the folks who are most vulnerable and who don't have resources and the ability to escape police and prosecution. So I think that what he's saying is being heard and received by a certain audience. And that audience, frankly, isn't going to be the people who are affected by the consequences of his decisions. And I think it's a really unfortunate outcome of this election is that folks were acting based off of their own perceived self-interest and not thinking about how this is going to impact our different communities and those who have less resources and privilege.
Mike Schmidt established a number of programs for transparency and accountability. Our new DA-elect talks about compassionate accountability. Can you talk about the difference and what he means by that?
I definitely cannot speak for Nathan Vasquez. I do not know what's on his mind and what he's planning on prioritizing, but I think we can see from his rhetoric and from what he campaigned on that there's going to be a focus on prosecuting aggressively, of locking people up for a long time and throwing away the key. And we know that that doesn't work, right? We're having right now in Multnomah County a very active conversation about the consequences of House Bill 4002 and what the new response to the criminalization that the legislature passed is. And I think it's another live conversation that plays out really similarly. There's a lot of data, there's a lot of research, all of the best practice and experts are clear that forced rehab does not work. It causes harm. It does not lead to folks being treated successfully for substance use disorder. It does not lead to folks no longer doing drugs. But that isn't the point, right? Like, that isn't the outcome they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to make it seem like they're being tough, like they're doing something. And I think we're seeing the same approach from DA-elect Nathan Vasquez, where it isn't about the outcomes. It's not about actually changing the course of folks' lives to reduce the likelihood of crime occurring. It's just about putting people in a cell, removing them from society, and calling it good. There are a lot of problems with that. I think we recognize that the flaws in prosecution and the criminal justice system leads to false convictions, leads to certain communities being policed and receiving the consequences of that more. We also know that the opportunities for folks to have appeals heard, to have proper representation in court are lacking because of systemic issues. But we also spend so much money on it as a society. The cost of a jail bed exceeds that of a shelter bed. And so these solutions that we are pumping all of this money into, there's never a public dialogue about how much money we spend on police or how much money we spend on prisons. It's always a blank check. And so when we have someone like Nathan Vasquez in office, it drastically increases the tax revenue that we're using to outcomes that don't affect our communities in a positive way, to things that don't actually address the root causes of our problems and just leaves us and our future to foot the bill for failed strategies that we've seen fail in the past.
Andres, let's talk more about Portland for All. Give your website again and talk about upcoming events and what you have planned for next year when DA-elect Nathan Vasquez becomes district attorney.
Our website is portlandforall.org. If you go to portlandforall.org/policytalks, you can see our past policy talks, complete with a recording for them. So if you weren't able to tune in, our first one was on safe communities. We had one on helping people experiencing homelessness, creating safe streets. We just had one on making enough housing for everyone, about housing production and affordable housing. So you can review all of those, check them out on our website. We're going to have one as the election gets closer on Portland's form of voting, ranked choice voting, and how that will work for voters, because we know that there's interest and folks want to understand how this new system is going to work and what it will mean to elect three city council members for each of the city's four districts. So we're really taking an approach of just what are the major issues, what do people want to learn about, and bringing together panels to speak to that, to share information. We're also in the midst of our endorsement process. So on our website, folks who are running for city council can apply for an endorsement. We're going to be reviewing those applications with our volunteer committees in July and August. So folks, please send candidates you like to them. We recognize how important our next city council is going to be in the role of local government, right? Portland for All is focused exclusively on local government because that's the area that is a volunteer organization. We can have the most impact. And because we know that there's such a role for local government in people's day-to-day lives. We're continuing to stay active in the Multnomah County elections, supporting Shannon Singleton in North and Northeast Portland and Megan Moyer in downtown Portland. And as a volunteer-run group, we're really driven by our members, by the folks who want to chip in and participate and help plan things. So please, if you're interested, reach out to hello@portlandforall.org. We can always use more help, more support. We will be active throughout the remainder of the year, doing our policy talks, doing our community conversations, launching our endorsements, and then supporting those candidates as folks who are values aligned, who are going to be those human-centered leaders who are framing a positive, inclusive vision for our future, not a return to the failed policies of the past. And we want folks to join us and to support and lift up that there's a real opportunity right now, but also a decision point. Are we going to have a November election that looks like the May election, where we elected Nathan Vasquez and lost Mike Schmidt? Or are we going to push back on the direction that the city has been going in and say that isn't who we are? We can do better. We can be hopeful and positive and progressive. And I think this is an opportunity for folks to take a stand and come together around that vision and that potential, because this is the year that we have that chance.
So, everyone, go to the website again, portlandforall.org. Sign up, volunteer, donate. I've been speaking with Andres Oswell with Portland for All. Andres, thank you so much. All the wonderful work that you're doing on behalf of Portlanders and Multnomah County. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And thank you to all the listeners who are keeping in touch, who are staying up to date, and who are continuing to fight.